Thanks for joining in to WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and we start the show today by taking a look at the world of science and our guest back with us once again, Bassam Shakashiri. Bassam's an emeritus professor of chemistry at UW-Madison. He's played a key role in national science policy, and he promotes excellence in science education. So it's going to be fun talking with him again today. And if you have questions about science, science in politics, science in education, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Bassam, thanks again for joining in.
Always a pleasure to be with you and your listening audience, Larry, always.
We have, always talked a little bit about everyday science, and you often speak about the importance of understanding science in our everyday lives. It's fall, and I've asked you this question before, Let's do it again. The leaves are changing color. What's the chemistry behind changing colors of fall foliage in Wisconsin?
It's a fantastic question, Larry. If you had not asked me that question, I was going to talk about it. Because the beauty that we experience every fall as we watch the leaves change color and undergo fabulous transformations, chemical transformations. This happens in the Northern Hemisphere. As the daylight hours get shorter, the temperatures begin to fall. This induces the trees to prepare for winter. And part of this preparation is to shed billions of tons of leaves. In some regions, like ours here in Wisconsin and in the entire listening audience, the shedding of leaves is preceded by a spectacular color show. We all remember this from previous years. You know, this year it's a little slower than before, and we'll talk about that as to why that is the case. The green leaves, depending on the species that they're from, they actually contain all these brilliant colors that we see, yellow, orange, and red, as well as brown, but they are masked. They are covered by the chlorophyll, which is responsible for the green pigment. Chlorophyll is not a very stable chemical compound. Bright sunlight causes it to decompose. So the trees are giant chlorophyll factories in the plants through the process we call photosynthesis. And as the temperature falls down, as the amount of daylight diminishes, as the amount of moisture in the air changes, then we begin to see foliage. And it is captivating. It's amazing to me how we all look at the natural beauty and admire our understanding of what is really happening. Larry, one more thing. On my website, which is scifun.org, I have a link to about a 3-4 page document saying what I have just shared with you, but also explains it some more, and there's some beautiful colors there too.
Oh, fall's kind of my favorite time of the year. You mentioned other factors, and climate change, I'm thinking, may play a role in the transformation of the leaves.
Yes, climate change is real. Climate change is causing the planet to be warmer. Thus, the delay in the decrease of the temperatures, and we still have green leaves. Here we are at the end of September. You know, the period of change varies from year to year, but it is a bit more pronounced now. It has been for several years because of the effect of global warming. And the human contribution to global warming is something we can do we can do something about. We should be doing. We are trying to do something about. There are natural causes for global warming, but the biggest factor since the Industrial Revolution is humanity's dependence on the use of fossil fuels as sources of energy. And when we burn fossil fuels, as everyone by now knows, we produce carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide gas is a greenhouse gas. It's one of the four major greenhouse gases, but we are responsible. We human beings are responsible for the tremendous increase in the amount of carbon dioxide that's in the air. And so, yes, global warming is a major factor in our witnessing the natural phenomenon in the Northern Hemisphere of foliage this time of the year.
Mm. You mentioned carbon dioxide. I think Phil in Mount Horeb has a question relating to that. Let's go to Phil. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I was originally from Cleveland, Ohio, and the Natural History Museum there has a long wall on which they graphed the vacillations from, carbon dioxide and ice cores that had been collected over time. And it showed in the last 150 years a dramatic jump from about 3 feet off the ground all the way to the ceiling, maybe 10 feet high, in just the last 150 years in terms of a relative increase in carbon dioxide. But I don't know if they're still showing that or not, but it's instructive. It really helped me conceptualize what impact we are having on the climate. The thing that I wanted to ask you is I'm interested in knowing what the current thinking is on methane versus carbon dioxide. Methane being, I understand, a far more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. And of course, waste dumps all the way to farms to the loss of the similar gases like propane from propane tanks. It just seems like we're bound to be cooking the earth unless we have some kinds of federal programs as well as state and local programs to clamp down on these losses and these emissions.
Thank you, Phil, for your observations, for sharing your observations and for your question. Make a comment first about your observations. Yes, all of us should become more informed. We should raise our awareness about the different factors that contribute to putting more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. There are studies after studies after studies that document the increase, the human activity resulting in increases in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere since the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution has done a lot of good for humanity. I can list two dozen different things, which I won't right now. But let me get to your question. Yes, the four major greenhouse gases are carbon dioxide, methane, nitrous oxide, N2O is the chemical formula for it, and then water vapor. Those are the four major greenhouse gases. There are other greenhouse gases too, but these are the major ones. And methane, as you correctly say, is more potent than carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas. But methane is produced, as you correctly indicated, from a variety of sources. We now tend to rely a bit more on having methane as a source of energy, because when it burns, it forms carbon dioxide and water vapor. I mean, that's the combustion process that releases energy. So if we can improve on the leakage of methane when it is produced in fracking, for example, if we can do a better job at that, we can diminish the amount of methane that goes into the atmosphere. Now, methane in the atmosphere does not exist for a long time, as long as carbon dioxide, because it combines with oxygen. That's it. You know, it undergoes the combustion process. All of these processes in the air are much slower than they are when we are engaged in them. So that's my comment about methane. It's a potent greenhouse gas, but we must control how we prevent leakages from the processes, the fracking processes that we are undertaking to get methane as a source of energy.
Yeah, Phil, thank you. How well are the governments responding to the challenges of climate change? Let's just put it that way.
Well, governments, you mean state government, federal government,
yes.
All governments? Yes, there is increased awareness. There's no question about it. There are legislative actions and elected governors and presidents are trying to take responsible action in order to mitigate global warming. We cannot stop global warming, but we can mitigate it. We can try to slow it down. And so governmental action is important, and governments respond to the citizens that elected them. So this is why it's crucial for everyone to contact their elected officials, local, state, and federal, and express their views strongly, respectfully, about the importance of having policies enacted and executed that make us good stewards of the planet that we live in. Stewardship is a very important human concept that we all must live, as it helps us protect the environment locally and everywhere on the planet. So yes, governments play an important role. In recent years, federal legislation was enacted and should be continued and should be encouraged to be continued. We should impress upon our elected officials in Washington and everywhere the importance of truly being united in individually and collectively to mitigate global warming. This is a very important part of being a citizen, a responsible citizen, voting in every election and taking a stand on the importance of using our understanding of scientific and technological progress to help us enjoy life on this planet and to also protect the planet.
Mm. Michael in Kakana emailed to say he's shocked at the current state of U.S. citizens' understanding of science. And that's his opinion. How well does the general public understand and cause the effects of climate change, for example?
Well, it's crucial for everyone to develop a better understanding and a better appreciation of what climate change is really all about. It's climate change is real. It's not a hoax. It is real, and we know from a variety of well-established scientific studies that the production, the increase in the production of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is responsible for that. Now, how well is the general public appreciating this? I would say, Larry, I'm very encouraged. I hear more people now, and I read about more people wanting to act to protect our environment. I think there is an increased awareness. Is it sufficiently large and wide? Not yet. That's why we as citizens, not only as scientists, not only as educators, not only as public radio hosts, all of us should engage in meaningful and respectful conversations about global warming and about the consequences of global warming on our daily lives and the lives of our children, our grandchildren, and all future generations. We must take responsible action to mitigate global warming. And one important way we can do that in this election year is to learn and to understand what these issues are and to support candidates who are advocates for protecting our planet.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today, Emeritus Professor of Chemistry at UW-Madison. Great to have him with us. You can join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at science on the program today and its importance with our guest, Bassam Shakashiri, Emeritus Professor of Chemistry at UW-Madison. Well, it's great to have him stop by. And again, questions, give a call, 800-642-1234, or email to talk@WPR.org. You know, here as we're on the air, we're, what, a bit more than 5 weeks away from the U.S. presidential election on November 5th. How have you seen candidates and their surrogates talking about science and technology?
There is some talk. I'd classify it immediately, Larry. Let me mince my words here, as being responsible in terms of providing leadership to help mitigate not only global warming, but to also address scientific and technological advances that we all benefit from. I think these conversations should continue to take place. I think the candidates have a responsibility as they want to lead us as a society to act in responsible ways. And I think the citizens, the voters, should follow what's being said and think about what's being said and consider the consequences of what is being said by the candidates. Presidential candidates, Senate candidates, candidates for Congress, all candidates, we should work with them to tell them what we want so that they, when elected, can exercise good judgment about the well-being of our society, whether it relates to global warming, it relates to health issues, to advances in health, tremendous advances in healthcare, Larry. We should be expressing ourselves and holding our elected officials accountable. We should help them to be accountable, not just point the finger at them, not just engage in this disrespectful discourse. We should be visiting with each other as responsible citizens of the United States of America, who have tremendous opportunities to exercise our rights as voters and as inhabitants of a society that is the most advanced society in history. We need to really take responsibility for what is going on. And you know what, Larry? We enjoy being in this society. We take very important measures as we live and interact with others. We should engage in respectful conversations with respectful discourse. And so that's a part of my response to your question, Larry.
Yeah. Is there, or do you have an example of maybe an anti-science political position?
Larry, everything we do is political in nature. I don't mean partisan in nature. I'm saying all human discourse is a form of political engagement. So there are many positions that have been stated as being, as you put it, anti-science. To really understand what I'm trying to say here, let's talk for a moment of what is science. What does it mean to be anti-science? You know, Larry, science is not on the ballot. People, fellow citizens, are on the ballot. It's what they believe and what they advocate for that we should be talking about. So, yes, there are many people who are misinformed. They are purposefully disinformed in this election cycle, in every election cycle, but this one is a very, very highly consequential one. So there are issues that relate, as we already mentioned, denying global warming. There are issues that relate to advances in technology, whether it's artificial intelligence or improved ways of communications. Yes, there are many issues that have been mentioned, and we should be responsible in how we react to what is being said, and we should insist on what it is that we want our elected officials to do. And these matters in healthcare, you know, they range from vaccination. You know, Larry, that's one of the issues. There are people who are anti-vaccine. You know, Larry, what the worst thing about vaccination is? Do you know what the worst thing about vaccination is, Larry? Is not to get vaccinated. That's the yeah. worst thing about it. Larry, we live, as I said already, in the most advanced scientific and technological society in history. And society is increasingly dependent on science and technology. That's why it's essential for everyone, all citizens, voters and citizens who are not voters, to develop an appreciation of science, the benefits of technology, and the potential risks associated with advances in both science and technology. This is why you well know, Larry, and our listening audience have heard this before, I'm a strong advocate of science literacy. And because science literacy enlightens, enables people to make informed choices. That's what we're talking about, make an informed choice. Science literacy allows people, enables people to be skeptical and to reject shams and quackery, unproven conjecture. That's the process that I'm talking about. That's what we believe in advocating. And we want to avoid being bamboozled into making foolish decisions where matters of science and technology are concerned. So science literacy is for everyone. It's for scientists, artists, all professionals, the general public, youth, and adults alike. And speaking of youth, Larry, we want our educational systems everywhere to encourage inquiry, being open-minded, listen respectfully to what's being said, and make your own decision. So, Larry, you remember in a previous appearance on your program, I asked you and I asked every listener to of course, vote, but also to recruit at least 5 eligible voters who have not voted before. You remember that?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact.
Is it fair to ask you on the air about a progress report on your part?
I haven't found anybody who's not voting so far. Among my circle of acquaintances and people that I meet with from day to day, I have not found one person yet who would admit to not voting.
Well, Larry, you've got 5 more weeks, okay?
Okay.
you and I and everyone else, we must live our citizenship in the United States of America. It's a great privilege for all of us. We sometimes, I'd say often, take it for granted, but let us act responsibly by examining the issues and what the candidates are saying and vote accordingly in every election, not just this election, in every election.
Clint in Lodi has something for us. Hi, Clint. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate the perspective of your guest this morning. I just had a quick question. So you've talked a lot about voting. You talked about the importance of political action with what is arguably one of the most kind of existential challenges that the world has faced, potentially ever, but let's just say the 21st century. And I pose this question to Michael Mann, and those of you listening might know as a scientist in climate change, very famous early articles from him back in the late 90s. The question I have is, you know, you talk about voting, you talk about the power of political action, you talk about all of these things. However, by and large, you know, the governments of the United States, governments of the world, the UN, other international pacts and agreements have been more or less unsuccessful in really making any major headway in combating climate change. And so my question is, do you have a sense of, non-governmental organizations, other non-governmental, not public entities that are doing great work in fighting climate change, where maybe we should be shifting our focus or resources towards those organizations in helping fight climate change?
Thank you, Clint, for your question. And yes, Michael Mann, a very respectful individual scientist who developed we're in Wisconsin, we're all hockey fans. You know, his model for describing the effect of increased carbon dioxide is called the hockey stick. But that's beside the point. I don't think we should shift at all. I just think we should expand what we're doing. We should work with elected officials. We should work with non-government agencies. We should work at the local level with school boards. We should work with the Department of Natural Resources. We should really expand sharply our involvement in the political process that has a lot to do with the quality of life that we enjoy and the quality of life that is to be enjoyed by our children and grandchildren. That's what I advocate for. That is what I've been saying, not only today, but before. And I will continue to say this. And I invite everyone in the listening audience to become more involved, more active in the process, not only on November 5, but every day, every week. It is incumbent upon us to take on the responsibilities of the freedom that we have, that we enjoy in America, to deal with those issues. So by all means, Clint, don't shift the focus. Just intensify the focus and expand it.
And just another partial answer to Clint, what you were talking about, I just talked recently with CNN chief climate correspondent Bill Weir about his book, Life as We Know It Can Be. Life as We Know It Can Be. And in it, Bill visited and talked around the world with various people who are involved in projects, research projects, to attack climate change. And most of them from a non-governmental basis. So you might want to check out Bill Weir's book, Life as We Know It, and then in parentheses, Can Be. That was the title of that book. And thanks to Joel Patnott, our producer today, for reminding me about it. Something to think about or look into. Terrence.
Yes, it is, Larry.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Excuse me, Larry. Yes, it is important. That's why we should marshal our energy and enjoy what we're doing. Some people sometimes say, you remind me that the sky is falling. Well, I'm reminding you to take action, to enjoy what we're doing, to participate fully in human discourse with fellow citizens, even people who disagree with what's being said, just so that we together, this is what I meant when I was referring to Clint's shifting focus. Let's not shift focus. Let's expand the focus and intensify it so that we collectively reach conclusions and then act responsibly on these conclusions.
And thank you again for that question. Terrence in Sturgeon Bay, what's on your mind?
Yes, I agree with what you're saying. However, I have talked with a lot of people about climate change. I have talked about the problems. I used to live in Florida. I moved out of Florida because of climate change. And what makes me very negative is the fact that no matter what you say to people, they have an answer that is totally off the chart, and it's somewhere as close to half the people I talk to. For example, even a politician in Florida. If I was a politician, I would put a law forward that you cannot rebuild some of these places on the outer islands. That would never go over. They want to rebuild and rebuild and rebuild and rebuild. On the Bay of Sturgeon Bay and Green Bay, when I was a boy, I could go ice skating on the bay at Thanksgiving. I can't go ice skating there now on Thanksgiving. I couldn't go ice skating out there till the end of January. When I was a boy, the bay broke up about the second week of April. Now it's breaking up in March. When you talk to people, they'll say, oh, no, it's just the normal changes, just like the lake going up and down. I think our education has failed us.
Hmm.
May I disagree with you? I agree with your observations, yes, and it is disheartening. It is actually, it can be demoralizing, but that's why we should find ways to communicate with others. And you know, as I have said many times before, not only in my classes and in other settings, when it comes to climate change and other issues, but about climate change, the first purpose of a conversation is to have another conversation. It's not to shut up the other person. It is to listen to the concerns and attitudes that they are conveying and engage in meaningful, respectful discourse about it. It is so, Larry. May I use you as a shill to make a point here?
Go ahead.
So, Larry, I want you to think of something that you really, really strongly believe in. Don't tell me what it is. Don't tell us what it is. Okay? Let's just think of something that you strongly believe in, and it's part of you. And now tell me. If I try to talk with you, not at you or to you, I try to talk with you in one conversation about changing your mind, do I have any chance?
Probably not.
This is why I keep emphasizing the importance of engaging in meaningful, respectful conversation. So my disagreement with the caller is not about the description that he shared. He's accurate in that. My disagreement is in the sense that I got from the caller that, okay, I'm going to give up. Please don't give up. Please don't give up. We all are in this together. You know, climate change is going to affect everyone, the people who deny it and the people who don't deny it. So that's why it's crucial for us to be responsible members of our community, our local community, our state community, our national community, all of us. And you're right, the educational systems can be made better. Failure is too strong of a word to use in this. I think the educators, as school teachers, college faculty, administrators, everyone, school boards, boards of regents, they are there to help us do a better job. And collectively, we have to decide what a better job means. So if we just give up and say, okay, I don't want to be part of this, I'm not going to vote, my friend, everyone in the listening audience, if you do that, you're doing a disservice to our society.
Hmm. Terrence, thank you for calling. Bob in Stoughton has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Bob.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
You're talking about global warming quite a bit, and I'm curious about your experts here opinion to support the green sources of solar and wind. We need something to carry us through the times when the sun doesn't shine and the wind doesn't blow, obviously. And I'd like his comments comparing batteries, which we don't really have the technology yet for that, and nuclear power. And I'd like his opinion on that. And the second question would also be his opinion on conservation. I don't hear enough of that from the candidates.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there are developing technologies, and we should support and encourage that development that will give us better batteries. There are attempts. By the way, Larry and Bob and everyone in the listening audience, the factors that we talk about in this conversation, in every conversation, are not only scientific and technological. They are factors that involve that have economic consequences. And we should always be thinking about the effect of these advances and the developing of new technologies and their economic consequences. This is essential for the well-being of society. It isn't that you develop something and it's really good and maybe it's very efficient and then it doesn't get used. So there's different elements in our social interaction with each other, political, economic, fiscal, educational, we can just go on, that have to be part of our discourse, our meaningful, respectful discourse with each other. So my comment about the newly developed technologies. Yes, their research is underway. The United States has led the world since World War II in supporting basic research, in supporting technology transfer. We should continue to do that. This is why we should understand what the positions are of our candidates and support the candidates that are advocating in keeping of what we want.
Carolyn in Green Bay will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Dr. Shekashiri. The reason I'm calling is to thank you, Doctor, because about 20 years ago, I called this show to tell you that my son was thinking about studying chemistry, and he was really worried that he wouldn't be able to find a job after he got a degree in chemistry. And you gave us some very encouraging words and kind of changed his trajectory. So he went to Stevens Point, studied chemistry, discovered the joys of carbon, became a biochemist, got a degree, then eventually went to Madison and got a biomedical engineering degree, master's degree. And now he's in Silicon Valley doing some really great things.
Oh.
Thank you very kindly, Carol, for this. It's always rewarding. It's joyful to hear about successful people, whether I had anything to do with their success or not. Thank you so much. And I appreciate your kindness in commenting here 20 years later. And I hope 20 years from now, Larry, others in the listening audience, long after I'm gone, we'll call and say something similar about what we're talking about today.
Yeah, Carolyn, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Bassam Shekashiri, our guest today, emeritus professor of chemistry at UW-Madison, known for his leadership in national science policy and also in promoting excellence in science education. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at science today with our guest, Bassam Shekashiri, emeritus professor of chemistry at UW-Madison. What are your thoughts as we move along today? I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. Numbers 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. There's some Pew Research noting that 57% of Americans say science has had a mostly positive effect on society, and that's down 8% from November of 2021 and down 16 points since the start of the coronavirus outbreak. Did that pandemic result in more or in less trust in science and scientists?
Larry, a lot was said by a variety of people, misinforming, disinforming the public about the coronavirus. And that contributes to the attitudes that people develop. So I think these studies by the Pew Research Center clearly support that. But I take the study to be an immediate challenge for us to improve the ways by which we talk about COVID and about other diseases, so that you know, as I said earlier, you know, a vaccination is an important responsibility that we have to ourselves and to our families and to others in our community. And as I said, I want to repeat it: the worst thing about vaccination is not to get vaccinated. Yes, there are social science studies that are telltales to us, and I use them as a point of departure for sharing what I've been sharing with you and with the listening audience just now.
The Wisconsin Science Festival is coming up in October the 14th to the 20th, or through the 20th, and you know, there's events that'll be taking place all over the state. And what, talk about the purpose of the festival.
Oh, Larry, it's the 14th year of the Wisconsin Science Festival. I am so pleased and so delighted and so joyed that there are so many activities offered throughout the state, not just in Madison, where this started 14 years ago. There are activities that involve youngsters, involve adults. There are, and so I invite everyone to go to the Science Festival website, the 2024 Science Festival website. By the way, the motto of the festival is "Curiosity Unleashed." Let us all satisfy the curiosity that we have. Let us nurture the curiosity that youngsters have. Let us also maintain this curiosity. So the Wisconsin Science Festival offerings, as you said, that truly all over the state, in big areas, in small rural areas, and they go on from for 4 days, beginning on Thursday. And end on Saturday, the 19th of October. So that's not too far down the line here. Please consider participating in the Wisconsin Science Festival. Most of the activities are in person, but there's some other activities that will also be happening on the web. And it's important for all of us to examine carefully what these offerings are saying to us, what they really mean to us, so that we think about not only that one day that we participate or that four days that we put, but we do it on a daily basis. So I am so pleased with the progress of the Wisconsin Science Festival, and I want to congratulate publicly the organizers and the sponsors, and thank the sponsors for the Wisconsin Science Festival. Most importantly, I want to thank the participants. So let's all participate in this. And if you can't make it during those 4 days, there's so many other activities that happen year-round which you should be part of.
And by the way, you are going to be leading an event titled Celebrating the Joy of Science and the Arts on October 19th during that week. What can people expect from your event?
This is going to, thank you, Larry, for mentioning that. This is at the very end of the Wisconsin Science Festival on Saturday, October 19, from 1 to 2 p.m. in the Discovery Building at UW-Madison campus. We're going to celebrate the joy of science in the arts. And I have a number of friends who will be participating in this event. You know, there is one character that you know, Larry, always participates in my events of this type, right? You know who that is, right?
Bucky Badger?
Bucky Badger, oops. Are we giving away something before Asher? Yes, Bucky Badger will be there. Beasley, the mascot for the Wisconsin Science Festival, will be there. And I will be joined by a wonderful quintet playing music, because creativity in science and the arts is to be nourished and encouraged. And so you're all invited. And if you go to my website, scifund.org, and also to the Wisconsin Science Festival website, you will see that this event will take place in person, but will also be streamed. So, and there will be a link. There is a link, which is too long for me to read right now and tell you about. But if you go to my website, you will see this link, and you can watch the program live. And then we're going to record it, and you can be played back anytime. So live streaming of the event, October 9th, Saturday, October 19th, 1 to 2 p.m. And there will be science experiments. Musicians will do science experiments and play music, and a few other surprises there too.
Okay. Here's an interesting question. Bill Nye is publicly promoting a candidate for election this year, the science guy. What do you think about the role of scientists in the political spectrum? Do you think they should be there, or what's your thought on that?
Scientists are citizens. Citizens are to participate fully in the political process. Every person has not only the right, but the privilege to do that. And people should express their views and their opinions. And if they want to endorse someone, if they want to say they're supporting someone, that's what they should do. My plea is for all of us to participate in this process and to make informed choices, informed decisions as we mark the ballot, whether it's an absentee ballot or you're voting in person. I think these decisions have to be informed. And, of course, we listen to other people. There are lots of endorsements, Larry, that we hear about from the sports world, from the political world, from the partisan political world. So Bill Nye has made his position, he stated his position. It's for us who hear what he says and why he says it to make a decision and see if that influences our choice.
Makes very good sense to me. Well, here we are winding up our time. And I had a bunch of other questions, and there are many other people that are waiting to talk with you, Bassam, but here we're out of time. But I guess, you know what? You'll probably be back, and we'll do this again.
Thank you so much, Larry. And may I just make one small statement here. It's a quotation from President Abraham Lincoln. And the quotation is, "Public sentiment is everything. With public sentiment, nothing can fail. Without it, nothing can succeed." That's what I'm an advocate for, to encourage public sentiment to be translated into action. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Bassam. Bassam Shakashiri, Emeritus Professor of Chemistry at UW-Madison, our guest. He'll be back, and we'll talk again about science. Matter of fact, we're going to take a more look at weather and climate. Our weather guys are back next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.